Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Whatever you may think about American women moving into combat roles in the U.S. military, you've got to give props to First Lieutenant Shay Haver and Captain Kristen Greist. They survived and prevailed in 4 months of grueling testing at the Army's Ranger School, and today are the first women ever to get their Ranger tabs. The Pentagon says that until somebody gives them a really good reason not to, they will open up all positions in the military, combat included, to women, and that one day women alongside men will be on the fiercest frontline battles in this country's wars. This hour on Point, U.S. military policy changing and American women in combat. Graduating class at Fort Benning today, and we will go there in just a moment. Yesterday, men and women who have just made it through this very, very tough course came out. Of course, it was the women who were making history. First Lieutenant Shay Haver was asked at yesterday's press conference whether she ever considered giving up, many do, during the training program. You bet.
Seriously considering quitting throughout the course, I think I would be crazy to say if I didn't. The men can back me up on this. There's definitely a point that you hit along the way. It doesn't matter where it is. It's all different for everybody else. But the ability to look around to my peers and see that they were sucking just as bad as I was kept me going. And I'm pretty sure that they can probably say the same thing.
And they went all the way, made history, got lots of admiring comments from their male colleagues yesterday. At that press conference at Fort Benning, Captain Kristen Greist described how she kept on going during the lowest moments in the tough, tough Army Ranger training program.
I just came here to try to be a better leader and improve myself, and I feel like I did that. And for other women who have that same goal in mind, just keep that goal in mind and, just don't lose sight of it and just keep reminding yourself of why you're there and they'll be fine.
Pentagon says combat roles will be open unless services carve out exemptions. That will be decided by the end of this year. These two young women, 25 and 26 years old, are kind of Exhibit A right now for what can be accomplished. With us now from Fort Benning in Georgia is Anna Mulrine, defense correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. She's been covering closely the Army Rangers' first ever full testing of women and is at the Army Ranger School graduation ceremony as we speak in Fort Benning today. Anna Mulrine, great to have you joining us from Fort Benning. Thanks for being here.
Hi there. Good to be here. Yeah. The graduation ceremony just started.
We're going to get some sound from that in just a moment. We're so grateful to you for joining us. What is the mood there with women for the first time ever joining in, graduating?
Well, it's pretty incredible. What we see here is a lot of West Point graduates, women who have come out to support these two new Ranger students. So women from the class of 1980 at West Point, which was the first class to graduate women, they are out in pretty full force. There are about 70 West Point women from various classes, early on and later, and they are, just hugging each other, kind of crying tears of happiness, just really calling today, just very empowering, and it's a really pretty festive, excited mood because, and what's also cool is to see the some of these observer advisors, so they've brought women in who are in the military, soldiers, but kind of to observe this program throughout the way to kind of advise them on how best to integrate women into the school. And so they're a new generation of women, and, they've really had a chance to bond with some of these, West Point, these older West Point graduates as well. And so that's been, you see kind of that intergenerational sort of, respect and these younger women thanking the, West Point women who came before them for everything they've done to pave the way. And then these, older West Point grads thanking these, kind of new generation of women for pushing it even further and, all they've done to kind of make this moment happen.
Shay Haver and Kristen Greist, both West Point graduates, graduating today from Fort Benning, where you are, Anna Mulrine. Yesterday, the Army had them out in front of cameras and microphones with A number of the men who they had gone through this course with, some of the male Rangers, said they were initially skeptical that a woman could complete the Ranger course. But here, classmate and second lieutenant Zachary Hagner told the story from these recent months of extreme testing of a moment in the course when he changed his mind, when he was trying to carry an automatic weapon, he calls it a saw here, and Captain Kristen Grice stepped in to help him.
I carried the saw for about 3 days, and I was like, okay, well, I need somebody to take this for me. And I went to every single person just in a line, no order, and they're like, no, I'm really tired too, I'm broken. And as soon as I went to Ranger Grice, this was on the last day of Mountain Phase, she was like, wanted it from me. She basically took it away from me. 9 guys were like, well, I'm too broken, I'm too tired. She, just as broken and tired, took it from me.
Everyone gets broken. Everyone gets tired in this training. But there, Kristen Grice stepped to carry his weapon, and he was ready to acknowledge that yesterday. Here was First Lieutenant Shea Haver also yesterday at the press conference saying that, there was skepticism among the women, a little bit defensive as they came in, but they were ready to give it their best. Here was Haver.
We ourselves came to Ranger School a little bit skeptical, you know, like with our guards up, ready just in case, the haters and the naysayers.
Yes, and there were some, and there's still social media. You can see that going on, but the Army pushing back, the trainers and officers who were there pushing back. At yesterday's Pentagon Conference, Secretary of Defense Ash Carter congratulated all the graduating class of the Army Ranger School. Noted that Captain Grice and Lieutenant Haver are breaking new ground.
Two remarkable women are among the 96 remarkable people. Truly, it's a huge credit for anyone, man or woman, to endure the intense training and curriculum at Ranger School and to prevail and graduate. Clearly, these two soldiers are trailblazers.
Anna Mulrein covered all that at Fort Benning. She's there today for the graduation. How many women, how many men came in? How many made it through, Anna?
Well, at the beginning, you had 20 women who would qualify through this kind of series of tests that they gave back in that's starting in January, so 120 of them kind of went out for this, roughly, and then you whittled that down to 20 through kind of just this intense, physical program, because, they've got to be able to, complete these long ruck marches and carry their weight and do the push-up and the pull-up. And so, basically about half of the students drop out of Ranger School the very first week, as a wrap week, Ranger Assessment Program week, and that's when they lose a huge chunk of Ranger School grads, and that's what happened for the women, too. So 19 started, one had to drop out for some administrative reasons. 19 started, and by the end of that first wrap week, there were 8 left. So then, by the end of the first phase of Ranger School divided into a phase of swaps for 3 weeks, the mountains for 3 weeks and the woods for 3 weeks. So they've kind of got to, really prove themselves in a number of different kind of wartime scenarios. And then Grice and Haver, those are the two that have remained. There's one still left who is now attempting to, kind of redo the mountain phase of Ranger School. It's pretty common here to talk to Rangers who have repeated various phases. You get debates about whether the mountains are tougher, whether the swamps are tougher, and so they have been, these women repeated the first phase, the woodland phase, 3 times, which at 3 weeks a shot, so 9 weeks just to kind of get to the second phase of Ranger School with the mountains and the swamps ahead of them. And that garnered them a great deal of respect among their fellow Ranger buddies. They talked about that yesterday at the press conference as well, and we heard it from the Ranger instructors as we were going through just the intense, not only physical, but really mental fortitude that you have to have to kind of do this again and again, knowing what's ahead of them.
And mountains, swamps, and woods, as you say, and with all the officers said, and here Captain Grice saying no lowering of standards, she was cut no slack, and she said yesterday she wouldn't have it any other way.
No woman that I know wanted to go to Ranger School if they changed the standards, because then it degrades what the TAB means. It would lower training for everyone and reduce that quality of training for the entire Army. So I don't think anyone wants to see that done. Maintaining the standards is absolutely imperative, I think.
And here, one of her fellow classmates coming out of the Army Ranger School, this is Second Lieutenant Anthony Rombold, saying at the end of the day, in the field of combat, he saw women as equals.
As far as the whole gender thing goes, when you're out in the field, you really don't see a difference. When you're out in the field and you're starving and you're tired and cold and miserable, you really don't think about the gender.
So today, the graduation ceremony, we read that lots of other West Point grads, women, have flown in to witness this. It's a big day for other women who see their own careers maybe as having been, handicapped, Animal Ryan, there in Fort Benning, because they couldn't be part of, formally, part of combat, though in practice, many have been right on the scene.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. They've been in combat for all these years, but you know, from these women who came before them, you heard this sort of sense of longing. I mean, deep admiration and a little bit of wistfulness. You know, that this is certainly something they would have loved to have done if given the chance, but but it wasn't a path that was available to them. And so I think through these other women, you see just now when Haver and Grice sort of walked in with their Ranger School class. They were smiling from ear to ear. The this group of West Point women were just on their feet cheering, and just a sense of jubilation. I think that they're sort of living vicariously to some extent through these women, and I think that's what we see here today. And I think they've been very touched to hear what these Ranger buddies, what the males have said about the females, that they've been pulling their weight, that they, think of them absolutely as equals, that they would go to war with them any place, any time, that they would want deep women beside them. We heard how Christ would get pulled away again and again by other squads within the Ranger School that were not her own squad, just so they could use her to help with their planning scenarios, with their war planning, with their, kind of battle planning, and especially with their navigation. She was known as just an expert navigator, and she was used to such an extent that at one point the Ranger instructors had to go to some of the students and tell them to stop using Grice, that they all needed to learn how to do that, and they couldn't.
And two made it through. Two women joining that class in Fort Benning today were Anna Mulrine, reports for the Christian Science Monitor. Anna, thank you very much for being with us. We are talking about women pushing deeper than ever into the U.S. military. Two brand new female graduates of the super tough Army Ranger School, Women in Combat. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about women pushing deeper into the U.S. military than ever. Two brand new female graduates of the super tough Army Ranger School, first time ever, and the question of exactly where women should, will end up in U.S. military combat roles. Today in Fort Benning, Georgia, the graduation ceremony for 90-plus, among them for the first time ever, two women. One of them, First Lieutenant Shay Haver, 25 years old, already served as an Apache attack helicopter pilot. At yesterday's press conference at the Ranger School at Fort Benning, she was talked about her new status as an Army Ranger.
I would say that it's definitely awesome to be part of the history of a Ranger School in general. So graduating with these guys next to me and the 90-plus other Ranger students that will graduate tomorrow probably will be one of the highlights of my life.
That tomorrow is now today. It's happening, and it's history. Captain Kristen Grice said she hoped that her success and Lieutenant Haver's would influence how the Pentagon brass decide in the coming months on whether women can fight as well as men in combat, all combat maybe, positions.
The decisions to open up further combat units, of course, will be up to senior leaders in the military. But I do hope that with our performance in Ranger School, we've been able to inform that decision as to what they can expect from women in the military, that we can handle things physically and mentally on the same level as men, and that we can deal with the same stresses and training that the men can.
And here from today's graduation ceremony in Fort Benning, Georgia, the national anthem as they got ready for their Ranger taps.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light?
We're looking at the roles that American women will play in the U.S. military. You can join us at 800-423-8255 as the first two. Graduates come out of Army Ranger Training School. Molly O'Toole joins us right now from Washington. She covers politics, defense, and the politics of defense for Defense One. Molly, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Would you please remind us of exactly where the U.S. military stands in its revamping of policy on women in the military and combat roles?
Right. For the past year, they've been the military has been undergoing a review across all the services to see how they can integrate, fully integrate women into the military. There's still about 200,000 occupational specialties that are barred to women. As of now. And so all the services have been undergoing this review. The Army Ranger course that these two women will be graduating from today, it was initially intended to be a pilot program to sort of study how they could integrate women in the military without adjusting standards whatsoever, so that women would have to meet the same standards as men. And due to the success of the course, not just these women graduating, but in the way that they are objectively able to assess their performance, more women will be afforded these opportunities, not only in Ranger School, but the Navy announced this week that they'll also be opening up their training course for their elite forces, for the SEALs, as well. And this is all part of the review. And in October, the services will have to get back to Defense Secretary Ash Carter to, if they wish to request any exemptions to the policy as it stands, which is that all positions will be open to women as of January 1st, 2016. And Ash Carter, the Defense Secretary, said yesterday that he's really hoping that all the services will be united on this front. And we have reports that none of the services are expected to request an exemption, with a possible exception of the Marines. And even still, they'll have to make a strong case to Ash Carter and other officials who are inclined to present a united front and really open up all those positions across all the services.
I want to talk with you about exactly what that means, what it will mean. Of course, everybody acknowledged that with the, what was it, something like 280,000 women who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, many found themselves in the middle of combat there. Back in January 2013, then Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta announced that the military's doors would be thrown open to allow women in all combat positions.
Everyone, men and women alike, everyone is committed to doing the job. They're fighting and they're dying together. And the time has come for our policies to recognize that reality.
Unless exemptions were carved out, and that will be decided if there are to be exemptions by the end of this year. At that Pentagon press conference yesterday, current Defense Secretary Ash Carter said all ground positions, all positions open to women, and that the services would have to give him some really excellent objective evidence before he'd consider keeping any billets closed to females.
The department's policy is that all ground combat positions will be open to women unless rigorous analysis of factual data shows that the positions must remain closed.
Molly O'Toole is with us from Defense One. So have the services been going out and looking for rigorous analysis of factual data to keep some positions closed or to judge whether some positions should stay closed in combat, Molly?
Certainly. That's what they've been doing over the past year since this review was announced in January 2014. The Marines have undergone some pilot cases for women in training. Obviously, we have the example of the Ranger School. Like I said, the SEALs will be opening up as well. So this is something they've been looking at very closely, something they've been examining in order to get some of that data, some objective measures of what the challenges are for integration, or whether those barriers are more arbitrary than actual. What the military is focused on here, despite some of the political or cultural sort of controversies around this idea, what they're focused on really is readiness. So they're trying to look for objective measures, objective data, in order to see whether the readiness of the forces will be impacted, but not necessarily negatively, positively as well. I mean, it's important to note that women are roughly 15% of active duty military, as you noted, more than 280,000 have deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan. And in many ways, these what women veterans will tell you, but male veterans as well, is that it's still the policy catching up to the reality here. Women have been in combat not only in Iraq and Afghanistan, but in the Gulf War and other wars as well. And all you need to look at really is the amount of service women who have been wounded or who have been killed. I mean, it's roughly, I think, 900 wounded in Iraq and Afghanistan, some 150 killed in those wars, to see that really women have already been in combat, and it's more the policy catching up to that reality.
Still, it's a big change. I'm reading here that 220,000 positions in the military are currently closed to women until this change comes. What's been driving this, Molly? Is it political pressure? Is it practical need or readiness, as you say, in the military? Is it, what should I call it, career justice? Because it's hard to advance if you don't have combat experience fully.
I think it's a mixture, really. The military recognizes that in the past that they have struggled as an institution with integration, gender, religion, race as well. And they want to be a modern institution. They want to be a modern force. They want the military to better reflect the society that they represent and they defend. So I certainly think that that is part of it. But there are practical implications as well. Like I said, women make up 15% of the military, roughly. And why would you want to hamstring some of those women from career advancement, from the most specialized training, from those experiences and opportunities? If you want to build a generation of leaders, in many cases, combat experience, some of this training, the storied Ranger tab, these are prerequisites in order to really advance in the military. And if you're putting restrictions on by gender, you're limiting also your recruitment, which the military has struggled with in the past. I mean, if 51% of your population, you're not taking as close a look at them, then that could put limitations on your capacity as a force. I mean, in addition, you know, women have played an increasingly significant role in Iraq and Afghanistan, not only because there really aren't front lines. I mean, we have a 360-degree war. That's what Representative Martha McSally of Arizona told me yesterday, reflecting on her experience and these women graduating today.
Women,
but not only that, there are also cultural sensitivities in Iraq and Afghanistan as well that women are uniquely suited to address.
To be out there in the field if they need to be in the presence of other women and dealing with those circumstances. Of course, plenty of men, too. Navy spokesman saying, we do not intend to ask for any exemptions whatsoever to the women in combat move here. Even for Navy SEALs, though some have said, well, you know, maybe that's because they don't believe women are going to pass that even tougher SEAL training. We'll talk about that. Air Force, women have been combat fighter pilots since 1983. That's a long time. They still carve out exemptions for air controllers who call in airstrikes from the front lines. Will that change, Molly? Is it clear?
It's not clear as of yet, but I do think that Defense Secretary Ash Carter, this change is coming from the top. And it's important to keep in mind, even as you noted, that some of these positions, such as calling in airstrikes, for example, the SEALs positions, the Ranger position, what they're talking about is opening up the opportunity to women so that they can try, which is not to say that, you know, all of a sudden there will be a flood of female SEALs or women on the front lines of combat calling in those airstrikes. It's simply opening up that opportunity for them to try out. They're still expected to meet those physical standards, mental standards that are required for the job.
Let's bring in somebody who's been right in the thick of this. There's been plenty out there, women as top gunners in Humvees, door gunners on helicopters in Afghanistan and in Iraq. First Lieutenant Christina Tremblay joins us now, military police officer with the West Virginia Army National Guard, served three combat tours, Bosnia 96, Iraq from 2004, Afghanistan from 2010, served in Afghanistan with special operations on Army cultural support teams conducting those village stability operations missions that could turn dangerous in a hurry. Lieutenant Tremblay, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
What does it mean to you, Lieutenant, to see the ceremony today at Fort Benning where two women become graduates of the Army Ranger School?
I've been really excited. Being able to see those new opportunities opening up and soldiers really getting a chance to just be soldiers, push hard, and try and move forward in the mission, it's been really nice.
You know that there are misgivings among some in the military. I mean, the head of the school there had to came out on Facebook to whack down a bunch of what he said were rumors about
standards being lowered and all kinds of complaints. Do you think there will be wide cultural acceptance of women in combat, all combat roles across the services?
I think you'll see culturally the same thing you see in the small teams that have worked with women. If women soldiers, airmen, Marines, get out, do the job, and show that they're useful operational members of a team, then people will accept it. And that's the big thing, is just getting them, getting to watch them work.
We've got Sokum Chim writing to us. I'm proud to serve with these women. Rangers lead the way. We've got Kristen calling from Berkshire, Vermont. Kristen, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much for accepting me. Mm-hmm. I have just one question, and that is, it's wonderful. I'm so proud of those of women out there fighting, and I know women have the strength to do it. But my concern is when you mix an army or any battalion of any sort, and you mix the sexes, there are going to be problems because the female and the male. And if that attraction happens at the wrong time and you are seriously fighting, I'm just afraid that, well, it will hinder what we're trying to do.
Kristen, I appreciate your call. Lieutenant Tremblay, what about it? There's been a lot of reporting on sexual harassment and worse in the military services, and our caller simply asks, you know, you get out in a combat situation, you get out, even without that, there's been plenty of trouble. What about sexual attraction, sexual harassment, and the rest in combat roles? How do you look at that, Lieutenant?
American soldiers are some of the best decision makers in the world, especially amongst the special operations community, our Rangers, our special forces. We teach these guys to be able to be out in the field, make good decisions, and do the right thing, even when no one's watching. How can we say that they'll be less able to do that just because there's a woman there? That's doing a great disservice to both our female and our male service members. We give them the training. We teach them how to do it. If there's a problem, that's a one soldier problem. But we have to trust their decision-making skills that we send them out into the field with.
Molly, we trust those skills all the time, but we have reported extensively, many have, on pretty large-scale problems with sexual abuse and harassment in the military. What about in the combat arena?
You're talking about a specific group of guys who really do their job very well. Now, have we had problems in the past? Do we still have problems? Sure. But the Army is constantly working and pushing to be able to address those problems. And if, as a leader, if I identify a soldier that has a problem with that, I'm not worried about the fact that he's serving next to a woman. I'm worried about the fact that he is not a good decision maker. I don't want that soldier in the field. That soldier is a discipline problem. It's not a situational problem. It's an individual problem. And we address that very strongly in the military.
Molly, how is the Pentagon looking at that challenge?
Well, it's there are a few important things to note here. Obviously, the military is still struggling with the issue of military sexual assault, but they've pushed back very strongly when people suggest that there will be some kind of heightened risk or heightened concern with more integration of women in combat roles for a few reasons. A, women have been in combat for decades, as we know, particularly in Iraq and Afghanistan. So if anything, that would have been an issue that we would have had to address sooner. But it's also – it's frankly rather insulting to members of the military who take their work very seriously to suggest that to have greater integration of women, you know, all of a sudden there will be some risk that there will be greater – greater assaults. I think that that is a suggestion that many of them certainly take issue with. That suggestion. Also, to if you look at other fields that are dominated by men, to suggest that women can't be greater equality in those fields because there might be a heightened risk of sexual assault. I think in any other industry, most people, men and women, would find that pretty ridiculous. In addition to that, it's important to note that military sexual assault happens to both men and women. In fact, there are actually more men that will be that will suffer military sexual assault each year because of the amount of men in the military, and it's disproportionate to women because their population is smaller. But that's an issue that affects both genders.
Molly O'Toole, stand by right there if you'd be good enough. We'll come back to it. Molly O'Toole with Defense One, Lieutenant Christina Trembley in Charleston, West Virginia. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at WBUR.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about women pushing deeper than ever into the U.S. military to brand new female graduates of the super tough Army Ranger School, first time ever, and the question of exactly where women will, should end up in U.S. military combat roles. By the end of this year, if any of the services want to carve out exemptions, they've got to make those very clear and make a statistical case for that, an analytical case for that, says the U.S. Secretary of Defense. Today at Fort Benning, Georgia, the first two graduates out of that Ranger School, Shay Haver, Lieutenant Shay Haver is there, and Captain Kristen Greist. Here was Greist yesterday explaining that there are far more important reasons beyond personal pride, she said, why the Army should hold women elite fighters to exactly the same standards as their male comrades.
Why that's important is that, you know, we're leaders in the Army. We're expected to do, you know, what we ask of our soldiers and then some. We're supposed to be leading from the front, being able to do more than we ask our soldiers to do.
But the rumors have been out there in the online, social media. Even at the graduation ceremony today, it was addressed. This was at Fort Benning, Major General Scott Miller addressing what he called rumors on the internet.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rap Week has not changed. Standards remain the same. The 5-mile run is still 5 miles. The times don't adjust. A 12-mile road march is still 12 miles. Time standards do not adjust. The required rucksack weights remain the same. There was no pressure from anyone above me to change standards.
And these two soldiers, female, made it through. First time ever. Brian is calling from Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Brian, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
What do you know?
Well, I think a major piece that isn't being talked about is the female advisors that were actually working with the Ranger instructors. So each Ranger instructor had a female advisor that tagged along throughout training. And I graduated Ranger School in March, and they were being vetted. So we actually had females in our midst within training that would actually do some of the training events. And these were senior non-commissioned officers, and they were helping that Ranger instructor kind of understand the difficulties that a female would have and trying to work through those friction points while we were training.
Are you suggesting that there were different standards, or was this just some kind of, I don't know, sensitivity, cultural awareness training, gender awareness training, what?
It was definitely sensitivity and culture and gender training. They just wanted to make sure that they had a female there just in case something arose between a Ranger student, a fellow Ranger student, that female Ranger student, a Ranger instructor, and that Ranger student. But also, it was awareness for us as Ranger students that, you know, it's not a good old boy system. We needed to have cultural awareness, situational awareness to understand that the integration of females is real and it's happening.
Brian, I appreciate your call from Fort Campbell. We've got response online here. William says, I agree, no matter color, sex, or sexual orientation, if they want to defend our liberty, God bless. Gina writes to us on Facebook, says it's an undeniable physiological fact that there will be combat situations where all the heart, intelligence, and determination in the world cannot make up for the 40 to 60% less muscle mass. Know and respect the limits. Lieutenant Trembley, what do you make of that? Sort of physiological argument that women in general will have less muscle mass than men. Does that come into play if they're tested for particular positions?
When our team is deployed, Admiral McRaven had come out and discussed the fact that you send soldiers into combat with different tools. An M4 does not do the same thing as a 50 cal does not do the same thing as a pistol does. Mm-hmm. However, I want my team to have all of those tools. There's going to be those 5'5", 100-pound men in the infantry. Then there's going to be those 6'5", 300-pound muscle men in the infantry.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them are in the infantry for a reason. If I need something heavy lifted, I'm going to look at one soldier. But if I need to put someone down a small hole or through a window real quick, I'm looking at that smaller soldier. That's why the Army has a minimum operational standard. Hey, here's the tools you need to do the job. Those specialized skills, that incredible muscle mass difference that comes in the biggest size of the men, and those incredibly small soldiers that you get,
mm-hmm.
those are individual talents that you leverage as a commander to make the mission more successful, not less.
David in Stanton, Virginia. David, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate you taking my call.
Yes.
Very quickly, I have two grown daughters, one of whom was chosen the Army Scholar Athlete her senior year. She was a track and field athlete. She could do more pull-ups than anybody on the football team. I have no doubt that a woman can qualify physically for the Ranger school. I'm no doubt whatsoever, and I'm all in favor of equal opportunity for women. My problem is war is killing. When you go through Ranger school, nobody's trying to kill you. When you go into battle, are we as a nation ready to see women blown to pieces, captured, raped, tortured, and beheaded in public by ISIL? And when we have plenty of men who are qualified, but who are not, because of our all-volunteer army, where the employee chooses the employer,
yep.
We are reduced to having women go into combat and be killed. I don't think it's something to be proud of that we've had all these women wounded and killed in Iraq. I think there's something wrong when we have to depend on women going into combat when we have a country of over 300 million people and we're going to see these women wounded, coming home wounded, without limbs, wounded. We're going to see YouTube videos of them, as I said, being raped and tortured and beheaded.
David, let us pick it up. It's a hot point you make, and I'll take it first, Lieutenant Tremblay, to you. The couple pieces to that, you know, first of all, are we ready to see, as David says, women blown to pieces, raped, tortured, beheaded in public? And then, you know, the question, is there something wrong when others, men, are not stepping up in this time of all-volunteer army, and so we're sending women? But first, is the country ready for this? The images, the facts that will come back from the battlefield with full combat integration, Lieutenant?
Here's the thing. Anytime one of our brothers or sisters in arms has that happen to them, it's horrible. But the fact is, not allowing them in the infantry isn't going to eliminate that problem, because I still have truck drivers running transportation missions. I have, you know, doctors and nurses who are at remote hospital facilities running their missions. They're already on the ground. This doesn't change that dynamic. It might make us more aware of it.
Don't combat roles, even in fluid current military circumstances, don't they push people closer to the worst danger?
They do, but again, in the current asymmetric battlefields, you can at any time, anywhere, once you're in country, be put in a shooting war, in a combat position. It's just a fact of military service. The other thing is, it's not going to change, or it shouldn't change, the response of the American people. We should be outraged any time we see one of our service members in that position. It shouldn't be worse because it's a woman. It should be worse because it's an American.
No special status for women on those terms. Lieutenant Tremblay, stand by, and Molly O'Toole. Elaine Donnelly joins us right now from Livonia, Michigan. She is president of the Center for Military Readiness. Independent public policy organization, looks into military and social issues. She was on the President's Commission on the Assignment of Women in the Armed Forces under George H.W. Bush back in 1992. She is not a fan of women in combat roles, fully in combat roles. Elaine Donnelly, thanks very much for being with us.
Nice to talk with you, Tom.
It looks like your opposition is not prevailing here. The military is pushing forward.
On the contrary, I've been very anxious to become part of this conversation. Let's talk about the data. By the way, our organization does not deal with rumors. We issued a news release congratulating the women who made it through Ranger School. So let's get that out of the way right at the start.
But the Pentagon is going to combat roles for women probably as of January 1.
Let's define combat. Combat are the positions, the infantry, armor, special operations forces. These are the units that attack the enemy. They are not the same as cultural support teams, female engagement teams, do valuable intelligence work. They work with indigenous women and children.
It's not limited to that, as you know. Ash Carter is saying carve out an exemption or they'll be in every role.
Let's talk about the data, all right, and why there should be exceptions made, all right, because I think we really do need to look at the facts. Out of 113, we know that two got through Ranger School, and good for them. But the experience of these two women does not make the case for women being in direct ground combat, the units that attack the enemy. And how do we know this? Well, the Army's been doing research for some time. With a Freedom of Information Act request, we obtained data about injury rates. And it turns out that in the training for units that aren't even, quote, not quite direct ground combat yet, artillery, military, police, Bradley vehicle maintenance, the injury rates were double of the injury rates of men. Now, you don't see the faces of these women out there, but when we know that injury rates average double those of men, we have to pay attention. The Marines also did some research, and my organization has put the facts out there. It turns out that in an artillery lift-and-carry test, 155 millimeter, weighs 95 pounds. 1% of the men could not do this. 28.2% of the women could not do this. Would we send our paratroopers out with parachutes knowing that 28% of them were going to fail? Well, of course not.
But of course, men fail as well. I mean, not in that percentage.
Yes.
As you said, 113 went into the Ranger School training. Most of them overwhelmingly were men, right?
Pardon?
Most of those were men.
Of course. But look, we're talking here about the average-sized women who are not the same as the physical elite. That was a term used by the British in a report where they looked at this issue. And they said even the physical elite, the very few women, extraordinary strong women like we're seeing today, even they are subject to injury rates much higher than men's. And we know that when fatigue sets in, I'm quoting the British report, even marksmanship, the ability to attack the enemy, is affected. So if we say readiness is the issue, if you're looking at rifle squadrons and maintenance, or rather the actual tank crews, if you have to remove a very large percentage of a very small unit, that could be one woman, you affect everyone else.
But hasn't your case...
There's no way that this could be decided as something good for women or good for the military. Recruiting was mentioned. According to the Pentagon's own surveys, propensity to serve, 28% of women said they would be less likely to join if they are required to go into the combat arms. And the idea of high standards, forget it, because you can have equal standards. To get diversity metrics, however, those standards will be equal but lower than before. Now, we know this because the Chief of Staff of the Army, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Martin Dempsey said, if a standard is so high that women can't do it, we're going to question the standard. So if you question the standard, you're only going to do one thing to keep those injury rates that I mentioned, double injury rates, under control. Well, you have to lower the standard.
Let's listen to Major General Scott Miller again yesterday. This is the commanding general at Ranger School. He's saying no change in standards.
The standards did not change. They went through RAP week. The 5 miles is still 5 miles. You still have a time standard associated with that 5 miles. 12 miles is 12 miles. You still have a time standard associated with that distance. The rucksack weights did not change. This was no change to the standards.
David in Danbury, Connecticut. David, you're on the air.
Excuse me. The sound bite is not on point. I'm talking about the gradual erosion of standards predicted by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs that will happen over time.
Ms. Donnelly, I'll come to you on that. David in Danbury, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I'm a former U.S. Army Ranger, 89, and father of three daughters, and I'm excited to have that opportunity open up for my daughters. I served 10 years with the Rangers. I understand where the concerns are that your caller was just speaking of, but given the same standards, I see no reason why our women, my daughters, can't serve in the Rangers just as I did. Other countries, Israeli puts their women out on front lines in special operations roles. They've been doing it for a while now, and it seems to be success for them.
Do you think it will mean lower standards over time, David? You were a Ranger for 10 years yourself. You've got three daughters. Will it mean lower standards?
Absolutely not. I think the standards should only get higher as the women get better.
Higher as the women get better. I appreciate your call. Elaine Donnelly, has your case lost the day here? I mean, after all, January is coming right up. The Navy says, excuse me.
Over 30 years of physiological studies contradict what the caller just said.
Are you denying, though, the reality of what's happening? In January, there are going to be no exemptions in the Navy, no exemptions in the Air Force. Army may have no exemptions. Only the Marines are holding out, as far as I can tell.
The Marines should be commended because they've had their infantry officer course trials. They had a lot of difficulty finding volunteers. The 29 who tried deserve a lot of credit for trying. We admire them. But the results did not show that women are the physical equals of men in the combat arms. Now, I understand the father that just spoke. We support women in the military. We all do. We admire and respect them. We respect their service, and so many have died in the recent wars. But all of that is not relevant to what is best for the military. The Pentagon has a goal called gender diversity metrics, what Admiral Mike Mullen used to call diversity as a strategic imperative. In order to get what General Martin Dempsey called a critical mass, you have to assign on the same involuntary basis as men a significant cohort of women, a lot of women.
Molly O'Toole, let me come to you on this. Is it coming? Are we going to see a handful of exemptions or no exemptions on combat roles? What's your estimate at this point?
At this point, only the Marines are expected to ask for it, and I think that the Department of Defense is inclined to really open it up across the services. They really have to make that strong case, and it's yet to be determined whether Ash Carter will accept it.
It looks like it's coming. We'll follow it as it emerges through the rest of this year. Molly O'Toole at Defense One, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks.
Lieutenant Christina Tremblay in Charleston, West Virginia. Thank you, Lieutenant Tremblay.
Thanks, sir.
And Elaine Donnelly at the Center for Military Readiness, thanks to you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.